All right, now let's turn our attention to Gaelic football. We started a conversation on Thursday morning's OTBAM with Kieran Donnelly. OTBAM is our daily sports breakfast show. You can catch us on YouTube or offtheball.com. He was talking to us about the need for defensive shape in Gaelic football to evolve. We're going to be joined to talk about this in a bit more detail by Tony McEntee in a moment. But just to frame our conversation this Friday evening, have a listen to what Kieran Donnelly had to say.
It's a great point you're making, Jern. That's the way the game is going, and that's what you're going to have. You're going to have teams that will be in the middle of a game or from a kick-out, there'll be a call and they'll go back into a defensive zone shape, and they'll actually know that when they're in this zone, the idea is that we're going to, you know, if you go out in the first 10 minutes and you're man-to-man and everybody's singled out and you're up, you know, you're really at fellas, and then from a kick-out, the runner comes in and makes a call and your team goes into defensive structure, and you're in that defensive structure knowing that when you get your turnover, because they'll come down, it happens in basketball, you come down the court in basketball and you're used to man-to-man and you're running all your sets, then you come down, the team throws a 1-3-1 at you. For a few minutes, you kind of don't know what to do. You're passing the ball around. What are they doing? Where are they? Why am I free? Where's my man gone? Why is he gone back there now? And then you switch it back up again 10 minutes later. He's back out, hopping off you again. That's keeping a forward, thinking it's keeping the team on edge, it's keeping the team not knowing all the time what they're facing. And I think it's certainly something teams could look at, and it's probably the next level, and it's probably, you know, I don't know how far it is away where teams get to that level where they're actually switching defences in-game to keep the opposition on their toes and not let them set on one way they're playing. So if they're playing against them a mass zone, that they, you know, keep the ball out wide and they force you to come out. But if you're switching it up, I think it certainly does give you options. And, you know, I think...
Are teams doing that, do you think? Are we seeing that?
I would say... I don't know if teams have got to that yet. I think there's certainly... I think Dublin are the closest to it. And I think they've got their clear tactical calls. One is the fist up that we've talked about. That's the obvious one. But is there little nuances that they have or that they go to at times? There is. Are they just, you know, that example that we keep going back to last year about Cluxton coming out and marking?
Yeah.
You know, are there calls for these things? Is it just that they've done them so much in training that they know when that scenario arrives that they do it?
Tony McEntee, good evening to you. How you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
What is the situation with regards to how teams are defending at the elite level in Gaelic football at the moment? Are we entering a stage now where we're going to see a lot of different styles of defence that attacks are going to have to try and break down?
So I think, Jeff, first of all, I'm not sure if Kieran could be more wrong in his angle. And I think it's maybe because of his Kerry, and maybe not just his Kerry, but the Kerry approach to defending. Or maybe, in some views, the lack of Kerry approach to defending, and that they try to apply an attacking, attractive brand of football. The reality is, at the minute, is that defending is such an art at the minute, and everybody is trying to explore a different angle or a different view to it. And it has changed so much, over the years. So from I started playing, Joe Kernan was looking at toward my midfielder, and that was his idea of a defence. Man the mark, toward my midfielder, and that sort of helped it. And then you had the Tyrone era there where you had, you know, Davy Hart and Philip Jordan attacking wing half-backs, and they were being supplemented by Brian Duher and Cavillin, Gerard Cavillin, as an example, you know. And nowadays we're looking at defences which have this zonal approach. So Tyrone at the minute are doing aware, certainly last year, the year before, we're doing a zonal type approach. Galway as well, where you pass off the man, where you don't tackle him, where you don't track him, you don't do any of that sort of stuff, and you offload him and pass him off. And also the likes of a lot of teams at the minute would do man-to-man on key players, or they would press the players on the side of the field that the ball is on, and then the opposite side of the field they would sit in, so they would, instead of man-marking everywhere, it'd be man-marked close where the ball is. And so that level of stuff. Then there's single sweepers, there's double sweepers. You know, and I suppose the point I'm making is that all those systems, every last one of them, involve a huge amount of preparation and work and flexibility and knowledge. Because to switch inter-game, I mean, between the same game, between one style and another style, is opening you and the team up to so much risk and so many problems, not less accountability and confusion. And then when it comes to the post-game analysis part of that, is where do you start looking at the continuous improvement part in that. How do you point out where it went wrong? Because one player says, oh, I missed the saying, we were supposed to go man-to-man and I went zonal. And, you know, defensively, defenders cannot take risk on. I remember years ago, Oshie McConville used to talk when we were splitting the players up for teams. He'd say, defenders go over there, and footballers over here, which was the forwards. So with defenders and defence in general, it's a low risk. It's a low risk approach to whatever we're doing. Typically, as defenders, we cannot afford high risk. And what Kieran's suggesting here may well be applicable in a 25 by 10 meter basketball court. It's just not so easily applicable in a 160 meter field or whatever it is.
In fairness to him, he was responding to a question that I was asking off the basis of having watched the Super Bowl at the weekend, where and I know the play stops. The play goes dead, so you can actually obviously do different things. But I remember Jim Gavin talking about how from the kickouts they were looking at the wide receivers and the routes that they would run and trying to steal some of the stuff that Cluxton was doing. And I was just asking if it's possible that the defence can actually become to a level of complication where in the middle of a game you can be going man to man for a period of it, and then suddenly you stop doing that because you realise that there are opportunities within it. The point you're making about how do you measure afterwards the success or failure of that and making sure that everybody gets the message, that's the issue. I don't know if there's a way around that, but is there a possibility of teams getting to a point where the next level is having a flexibility within your defensive system?
I would imagine that would be so selective. My experience of county football from playing and the support I've had there recently with county teams is that the players like to have a structure. And for the most part, players like to know exactly where they are, exactly what they're doing. And I suppose for me, that's taken a wee bit of their own creativity out of it. Now, offensively, there's loads of creativity. Offensively, you can do pretty much anything you want, because what's the worst that can happen? You kick a ball wide, you know. But defensively, everybody really loves to know where they are, what the position is, what the impact of that is, what's the knock-on effect of it, you know, where are they in the system of play and everything. And to do that and then ask them to change multiple times or with periods of time throughout the game, I'm not sure if it's actually possible. But maybe if I take it away from being possible, is it actually needed? Do we need defensively now, and I talk defensively, I mean inside the 50 in that direction, rather than anything else. Up further up the field, you could change it surely. You can press kickouts quickly. You can smother around midfield areas. You can push everybody up the way Dublin does sometimes and bring 4-4-4 across the half-forward, full-forward and midfield area. You can do all that. But if that's what you're talking about defensively, then yes, anything's possible out the field.
Sure.
But the closer you are to goal, it's not.
Yeah, and the question is, why would you bother doing it? And I think, to be honest, it comes off the back of a conversation about Owen Merchant's goal at the start of the second half in the replay, where Kerry have gone man-to-man. There's a few brilliant runs from players that take everybody out of position. You've got somebody who's super fast. He gets a couple of yards on the guy whose job it is essentially to take him down and take the black card or decide that we're going to let him score the goal. And in that instance, if you had a sweeper, is a sweeper going to do the right job? It's just maybe for the first couple of minutes when you're trying to prevent a goal, you do something different, and then 10 minutes in, everybody goes, okay, now you're on your own, lads. It was kind of a little bit of that thinking about, like, at different stages in the game, there are going to be different criteria. Or if you're defending a lead, do you defend a lead the same way as you would do when you're winning the game? And maybe you do.
Yeah. So I think there's loads of evidence nowadays to show that the scoring zone is a defined area for pretty much everybody. And I'm not sure the mark is going to change that much. But there's a clear scoring zone around the D, and that nowadays is the holy grail of protecting. So teams are looking at defending and protecting that scoring zone. It's also the case, and your comment there is, that if you're 3 points up with 2 minutes to go, you're going to sit back and cover it. But that's not so much, I know, a different defensive strategy. That's like scrambling. That's like getting everybody back, cover the space. You're not changing your overall strategy. You're just simply getting more numbers in place and doing more with the numbers, or being more, I know, more obstructive, maybe is a better word for it than that, you know. But having a defined, specific, directional change in your strategy is just so different to something that we're currently preaching in Gaelic football, something that we're trying to create in it, you know?
Yeah.
And as I say, the risk in that is just so big at the minute.
Is there a single overarching philosophy at the moment behind the defence that we're seeing from the best teams? Is there a commonality between it? Are most teams looking for, say, two or three markers in their team whose job it is to go one-on-one with the best forwards in the opposition, try and limit them to between 4 and 6 points, and maybe you've done a good job, and then for everybody else to be runners and zonal? Is that kind of how things are set up at the moment?
I think that's a fair reflection. I think the other piece to add into that is the runners, the tracking part. So defensively, teams are, as you're after stating there, marking the good players, maybe one or more sweepers in places, and then people holding different positions of the field. The piece after that, I think, which the better teams are managing better, is tracking the runners then coming through the middle, whether that be halfbacks or midfielders or forwards that come out, that sweep around and come back in. It's the tracking of those runners and what to do with them is the piece that the better teams are doing. And if we do look at even Dublin as an example, as the best team in the country, and we look at the likes of Jack McCaffrey, like when Jack offloads the ball, he then makes an attack into a space or at a man to try and create room. So offensively, teams are now trying to say, well, if we have a defined defensive structure and people are taking up zones and places, how are we now going to start moving these around like chess pieces to create gaps and to create opportunities? And the very best teams, and I'm talking about here, Dublin, Kerry attack offensively, Donegal potentially offensively as well, they're the teams that's now trying to exploit that space and how we set up against strong, good defensive units.
Yeah, and you can see that, and that makes a lot of sense. Generally, in most sports, when offensive minds start thinking about moving the chess pieces around, there's somewhere a defensive coach going, I see what Jack McCaffrey's doing here, and I need to build something that's going to be robust enough to stop that. So let's say that Jack McCaffrey, the run from either touchline in, which leads to a goal chance, which we've seen him do, and he repeats it again and again and again. There was a couple of times last year where he tried it against Kerry and didn't get a full head of steam up, and you're like, okay, maybe Kerry are actually, they've done something here. Somebody has leaked back to the cornerback position to be an extra man and just slow down the pace of that. So obviously there's some kind of level of talk going into that, and maybe that's just a situational response to what the players see as opposed to an overarching structure.
Yes, but that's good defenders or good defender in that case making a decision.
And are they free to do that? Is that like, look, when you see he's on that run, you ignore exactly where he is, but you make sure you get to position X in 3.5 seconds or whatever it is?
No, I don't think it's as simple as that. I'd say it's on the back of video analysis. So you'd have seen the runs by Jack, you'd have seen the different patterns of maybe trying to run at different stages. And after watching it through two or three examples on a video, in Kerry's case, for example, whether it be Peter or Donny Buckley, they would show that example maybe a couple of times, and the player is learning from either mistakes or learning from just viewing it on somebody else's mistakes, as the case is, you know. Yeah. It's habit formation and knowledge really more than anything else, you know. So maybe to make this more real is that, say, the likes of the teams that don't get to the Super 8s won't be as good at tracking Jack McCaffrey's runs. So the likes of, in years gone past at least, Meade, whoever else, and that sort of middle range bracket, those teams are not as competent at marking the likes of Jack McCaffrey and his pace as the likes of Mayo or Donegal or Kerry, as the case is.
And why is that?
Well, the good teams are out in July. You know, those middle range teams are out in July, you know. And then we get hard ground, we get good football and big occasions. We get another 2 months of the top teams performing much better at that top level. And then at that stage, it's smaller number of teams. It's much more emphasis on video analysis. It's much more emphasis on tactical and positional movements. It's much less emphasis on the fitness aspect to the Gaelic games at that stage, you know. And the better teams are just simply spending more time in it and actually improving, rather than the middle range of teams who are just finding it so difficult to get up. You know, Meade, for example, yeah, at the risk of relegation. Yeah. Calvin, so on and so forth, you know.
Yeah, and Kildare over the last number of years, it's exactly the same. Yeah. And it's weird how the system is actually built to protect the best teams. And look, we can get into a separate conversation there, but it's interesting because we don't know how anybody who hasn't been a part of an intercounty setup doesn't really know how those conversations about defending and what the team's philosophy on defence is going to be are had, and how those video sessions work, because we haven't, you know, there's been no real proper documentary of that. There's been no real kind of opening up. And look, I understand counties aren't going to do that. But what's the blend of time on the pitch versus time in a teaching environment where there is proper analysis going on of like, okay, well, this is what your role as the left half back is going to be versus this is what your role as the sweeper is going to be?
I think it's improving. I think there is a risk. There's a risk at, from the county level adapting it to clubs, and that it becomes too far into the analysis piece, and that you don't get the technical piece on the field, you know. But again, just back to the good teams and the top teams, at least they seem to have a good balance here, where they're training two or three nights on the field, and then the video analysis done through clips that's sent to them offline. You know, so if they're training Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, you know, choosing tours that are getting video clips, small clips of something that they can look at, bite-sized stuff, you know, they can review it, analyze it, feed it back if they want. Or in some of the teams nowadays, they're getting together as groups. So people in local areas are able to get two or three players together where they can go and look at a game, look at their analysis afterwards, try and pick out their own stuff, you know. And there's a lot of stuff now coming that the players are becoming self-empowered in relation to identifying their own video clips. Because possibly that's the best way to get them to learn from identifying their own mistakes and then talking it through with the coach or the manager or whatever the case is, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's well improved, actually.
Yeah, and as a coach, you must enjoy that, right?
Oh, yes, but the players love that. The players love it, to a point, of course, you know, to a point until it gets too involved in their life. But certainly for the early parts of it, the players love that because there's a learning in it and an improvement in it. And certainly when they see the benefits of it on the field after going through some exercises like that, you know. But if you're doing a weekend camp before an All-Ireland quarterfinal or an All-Ireland semi-final, then you have 3 days of high intensity focused exercises where you're looking at those patterns, you're practicing them on the training field, you're reviewing it afterwards on video analysis, some description, and then you're implementing it into a match, you know. So it's a lot of activity and it's very focused, but that's for the good teams at the later part of the season.
As a coach of a team who obviously, you know, whatever team you're involved in, they always want to be going late in the season, and Dublin are the standard bearers, are you always thinking about what the Dubs are doing so that you know that whenever that test comes, you're going to be ready for it?
You're talking about from what might a normal manager be thinking at the minute?
Yeah.
No, I really don't think so. I really don't think so because, you know, you're going to play them once, maybe twice if it's Super 8s and semi-finals. But I genuinely think that you need to spend more time looking at your own system and your own player. If you have two or three errors in a game due to mistakes that you've made, they're the difference that work in the match for you. I think the piece when you're looking at your competitor is the week of the match or thereabouts, if it's All-Ireland semi-finals and stuff, that it's that week of the match, it's that time where you focus on your opposition for a while. But you have so much time here to try and get your own processes right. And it's your own mistakes to fall down. It's your own sweeping patterns over and back the field. It's your own attack motions. It's your own possessions that you might have, you know. So I think you really need to spend more time looking at ourselves, maybe more so than the opposition.
And in terms of, so most sports will have a separation between an attacking coaching setup and a defending coaching setup. You know, you think of rugby's obviously have that. Interestingly, Leinster don't do that, and Stuart Lancaster looks after both sides of the ball, which is unusual enough. You kind of have to be obviously high functioning to be able to do both things at the same time. But his point is essentially that when we're defending, as soon as we get a turnover, we need to be attacking. And if my defence are like, okay, well, that's our job done, then what's the point of that? So I see both sides of this, but in Gaelic football, I presume coaching the turnover and turning that into instantaneous attack is kind of more of the Stuart Lancaster side of things. Well, you've got to go when you get the ball.
Yes. Now, I'm not sure so many county teams have the luxury of having separate defence and attacking teams, to be honest. I think even if they have, it's somewhat manufactured to allow for separation of training exercises where you focus solely on attacking moves or solely on some defensive structure. But if in order for teams to work properly well, it has to be the Stuart Lancaster model. It has to be that fluidity between defending and attacking, because never, you know, it used to be that years ago they talk about, you know, defence starts at number 15, but that was only just so that the forward would switch on and waken up. Nowadays, defence does start at 15 because he's actually a defender and he's pulled back out to the 65-yard line, and that's where he starts his defence and he has to do all the work, you know. So things have changed so much here that fluidity between attack and defence is not more, it couldn't be more relevant than it currently is.
Yeah, and I wonder, like, so when you think back to McGuinness and his teams, the criticism that they got, but their right corner back was frequently popping up at right corner forward, kicking points or sometimes missing. But was that the start of that, or had that always been the case?
No, I think it's before that. Now, listen, in my day, Enda Penalty was a super cornerback. Played really well as cornerback. He's obviously sick culture now. But there's no Enda Penalties left. Maybe Mike Fitzsimons or somebody. That's about the only Enda Penalty left. Everybody else gets forwards. Johnny Cooper gets in the end of attacks. You know, Donegal's are all the same. Like, any of the good teams have fluidity of cornerbacks becoming corner forwards and being able to score. So the out-and-out only man marker is actually a rare specimen at the minute. So, but it's long before Jimmy. Like, it's been there a long time. Like, as I said, about, you know, the likes of Davy Hart and Philip Jordan and people like that, Ray McMenamin getting up the field every so often.
Yeah, of course, Ray McMenamin. Yeah, how did I forget about him? Yeah, and that makes perfect sense. Can I play you one more clip? This is kind of a different point, but we had Billy Joe Padden on the show during the week as well. He was chatting with Joe about Mayo's shot conversion rate, and Billy Joe has a theory that actually he helped validate when he ended up going to Armagh, that in Mayo and in other counties, they don't really prize the inside forwards enough, and they try and end up turning inside forwards into brilliant halfbacks as opposed to just saying, get in there and take responsibility. Have a look at it anyway. He can explain it a bit better.
I have had this debate about the culture of Mayo football and what we value in terms of the skills, particularly attacking players, have. And I definitely think that I've noticed that difference with being in Ulster now. And you see that there is value put on players that play close to goal, and probably maybe there are players that played for Mayo. Look, the prime example I would mention is like Andy Moran, probably one of the best inside forwards Mayo have produced, one of the best inside forwards in the game over the last 10 years, played football at right half back, you know, for Mayo at times. You kind of have to ask yourself the question, well, if you have a player that can play so efficiently on the inside line, it's the most important area of the field, because putting the ball over the bar or in the back of the net is still the most important thing in the game. And I think that's culturally something that Mayo have to consider and address, even when they're dealing with their players at underage level and all that. And I know James probably doesn't want to talk about it. James is probably the exception, because he was a really efficient shooter, long-range shooter, when he was playing.
Yeah.
Brilliant at that. But I think when you look at the stats you read out, and specifically in relation to the game the last day, a lot of that comes down to inexperience. It was players that haven't played a lot of football at this level, whether it be James Carr getting a mark and hitting the post with the resultant free, whether it be, you know, James Durkin missing frees, you know, young players like that. Probably it wasn't good enough. But like, I suppose I don't want to be too critical on them, because sure, you know, player development takes time. Some fellas walk onto a field and they react really quickly. Another fellow might take a full league campaign and a championship campaign to get up to the level. So by no means should you write off those players as not being able to improve that efficiency or be, you know, viable inter-county forwards in future. But I think it's as you said, and like I've said, it's not good enough. You're not going to compete with Dublin with percentages of that level.
Is there a cultural issue in some counties that they don't understand or appreciate the value of inside forwards? Like, I don't get the impression, certainly from Ushing's comment earlier on about the defenders and footballers. Like, I don't remember Stephen McDonald. I could be wrong, but I don't remember him playing in the half-back line.
Interestingly, Stephen McDonald, prior to his success in 2002, he wasn't getting game time with Armagh at that stage. And the reason being that in training sessions, the two Bryans were managers and he used to play as a defender. So Stephen McDonald was a defender, like a spare man, just played as a defender. And for whatever reason, Joe put him up front, and the rest is obviously history with Stephen. So it's hard to know. Listen, I think Billy Joe has a point here. And I think the point in Billy Joe's message is here is that we do not, and the vast majority of teams in this case here, are not playing ball to an inside forward line. And I think the reason doing that is because partly because of the mass defences, partly because of trying to get long-range shooting around this D that we talked about earlier, and partly because they're simply not looking for it. And I think my frustration, or one of my frustrations looking at some county teams at this stage, is that the player in possession is not making the right choice as to whether when to carry that ball, when to kick it to an inside forward line, or when to actually take that chance and go for a score. And for me at the minute, is inside forwards generally, and that's a lot of inside forwards at the minute, and not being serviced at all by either first-time ball-in or dinking ball-in or otherwise. Like Kerry being an exception, Kerry are very good at this, and Dublin, to be fair to them, are actually reasonably good at it. But putting ball to the inside forward line is something that has simply not been done well by a lot of county teams. And the problem there is that once the opposition, fullback lines are getting away with lots of stuff at the minute. Like fullback lines don't have to, like, there's questionable marks over a lot of fullback lines in inter-county football at the minute, and yet they will not be exposed because that ball won't go in the first instance. And then after that, it's long-range shooting and whatever else. And once that defence stops that long-range shooting, or at least limits it to outside the scoring zone, then they're doing their job really well. And nobody finds out if that defence is rocky or not. Galway, for example, last year, like a questionable fullback line. Kerry has a questionable fullback line as well, you know. And they're good teams. They're really good teams, you know. So Billy Joe has a very valid point in what he's saying here, particularly around the full forward piece.
Is that just because teams won't take the risk of getting the ball in?
No, I don't want to be critical here, but I think it's because inter-county managers are not taking the risk of getting the ball in. And when just one simple thing, like when I was involved in county football, we looked at possessions in Mayo at one point where we were losing the ball. Very simple stat, okay? So if you lost it in your third of the field, as in your defensive part of the field, there was a high chance that the opposition was going to score it. In the middle third of the field, there was a reasonable chance. In the top third of the field, regardless of where you lost it in the top third of the field, you had a very little chance that the opposition was going to come down the field and score because you had a chance to set up defensively and be structured in some way or other. Now, what that was able to tell you was that that pass you're giving in is no longer a high-risk pass that's going to convert to a score. It might lead to a bad stat in relation to attacks into conversions and scores, but what it doesn't do, it doesn't impact your ability to give away scores on the other side of the field. But you have forwards, Andy Moran as an example. You have a forward in there, like it's a hugely capable person, a fulcrum in there who can win possession and automatically turn into scores with Lee Keegan or Kevin McLaughlin running past and Aidan O'Shea. But yet, that's a resource that's not been used because the managers, typically, let's blame the managers for a start, the managers in the first point don't encourage it. The players in the second point are afraid of the high risk that might be involved with losing the possession and getting a bad stat. And then toward, which is an unfounded argument here, is that once that ball's lost, you're running a high risk of getting a score to the far side of the field. So I think it's a coaching and a management issue because it can't just be coincidental.
Yeah, so a cultural shift is required in that attack. Is the mark going to damage the number of, like, is that automatically slowing the game down and giving the defence time to get back in? So we're going to see far more pot shots early on until people realise that's a bad idea.
No, I was talking to an inter-county manager recently who spoke about that they might have 40 attacks in a game. And of those 40 attacks, there might be two marks. So in that example, he wasn't training to develop the mark because he said, I've 38 other attacks, which I'm not doing anything for.
Yeah.
He also said that, you know, his players are well fit to kick the ball 20 yards, 25 yards, whatever the case is. So when they saw the opportunity for a mark, they would continue to take that opportunity for a mark. So I think what the mark will do, it'll be there. I think it'll help get a few handy scores for some opposition forwards. But as a whole, I don't think it's going to revolutionise the way we play attacking football.
So you're not too worried about it then?
No, I'm not worried about it at all. I'm worried about how it's officiated. Because even so far, we haven't seen much. I went to the Armagh game, not last weekend, the weekend before. And the player, as is the rules, would have to raise their hand and the referee blow the whistle. But last weekend, I was watching another referee, Joe McQuillan, as it happens, who would blow the whistle every time the ball was caught, even if the player didn't raise the hand.
Right. You
know? That's it's a simple thing. But like, there's a whole lot of problems potentially with the mark.
That's a big difference. You know? So just one last point on this. Obviously, Michael Murphy caught one out the first week and it had been chipped from just over the 40 to him. Ball clearly travelled the 20 and he tapped it over the bar handy enough. Now, Michael Murphy's obviously fairly unique in his ability to always nail those. Is there any way that a coach is going to look at this and go, I'm not going to have 40 attacks and two marks. I'm going to try and have 20 marks and see if I can turn those 20 marks into 18 scores or 15 scores. That's the next wave of a coaching coming and going. Well, if most inter-county managers are like the one you spoke to, well, then I'm going to try and zig while they're zagging and actually put my Michael Murphys or my good kickers closer to the 40 and take the risk that from those 18 shots or 20 shots I'm going to get. Is there a possibility the team comes out with that?
There is, but to your point where you said at the start that current inter-county managers are looking a bit man-marking the key players and then developing something else around that, Michael Murphy's going to be marked. If he gets an odd score, then that's fine. But he will be. There will be, I don't know, maybe two per team that you have to mark that has the capability of scoring from 40 yards. In Amma's cases, maybe Ray National, Neil, Supi Campbell. But after that, you're really looking at taking a chance on somebody else. So, you know, I think if we do go down that route, it won't be so hard to defend against because there is only a handful of players in every team that can score from big distances.
Okay, that makes sense. Your general sense of how the game is evolving and the quality of coaching that we're getting at the moment, are you impressed with what you're seeing over the last couple of years, or it sounds like there's definitely some room for improvement?
I think the beauty of our game is that there's so much, defensively we spoke about at the start, there's so much improvement defensively which has happened, there's so much variation I suppose which has happened, and for me the most part of that has been positive. I also think that the attacking game at the minute has got much better by some of the bigger teams at least adopting that more positive approach to it. I think that is a way to go at the minute. I think the big improvement will be that decision-making piece around the middle of the field as to what the good players do when in possession, as in attack, run, pass, whatever the case is. So I think we're still in for quite a room for improvement in that sector of the field. So I think our game is in a reasonably actually good state if we look at the county football. I have a bigger gripe at the minute because I think it has a huge impact on what the club is doing at the minute, and that's maybe for another day. But certainly from a county perspective, I think there's a good spectacle there. I think the better teams are adopting a more positive approach to it. I think the second-rate and lower teams after that are still adapting and trying to get there, and they have a long way to go with it. But overall, I'd be very positive about it.
Tony, great stuff. Really fascinating this evening. Thanks a million for sharing all that with us.
Thanks, Jer. Take care.
Good stuff.